Hello. My name is Donna Cease, and I'm Spiritual Programs Coordinator here at Kadampa Center. And I'm just going to speak for a couple of minutes and then let David do his magic. You're probably aware because we offer any Dharma courses, and meditation is Dharma, without requesting that people pay a fee to come, because we think this is just really, really important. We would never want money to be an obstacle to anyone receiving it. But we do live in the real world, and so we need money to keep the lights on and run the center. So if what you've been learning here is useful to you and moves you at all, we would appreciate any support that you offer us. And there's a donation box on the wall right outside the door to the Gampa. The other thing is that in Buddhism, we have the concept of karma, and part of karma is that whatever you experience, you created the cause to experience it. So somewhere along the line, you created the cause to be able to be here and learn about meditation and gain whatever benefit you gain from it. And we at the center really value what is offered here. And so as a center, we want to be able to keep offering the teachings. We want to be able to keep having teachers who can come and provide these teachings. And so we're also sort of trying to practice that kind of karma by showing our appreciation to our teachers by giving them individually a little offering from the center. So I will give David an offering right now, and then we're out of here. Then I'm out of here, and you can actually enjoy David's teaching. Thank you.
Continue to say, you know, the thing is that the people that came before you built this center. So it's kind of a, in my mind, I think it's sometimes it becomes like a pay it forward thing, right? So even if you can't ever come back again, you contribute something that down the road is going to benefit somebody else. So I think about that a lot, because when I first started coming, we were in a small little office up the street in the basement of an office complex, and we were able to move into this, and that was kind of like, wow, we're moving up. So I'll remind everybody, and myself included, make sure your cell phones are off. And I guess we're not streaming this tonight, but we are recording it. So we'll have Michael's out there, but we will have to do the same with the microphones if we have questions. So, is anybody here for the first time? Okay, well, welcome. This is the class number 5 out of 5. So I don't want to, you know, discourage you. You'll be fine. This is always a learning process. Every time you sit down and do meditation, you could consider, well, I'm doing it for the first time. So. Have you all done any meditation before, those of you who've been here? Yeah, all right. So we normally have the handouts are all available online. If you go to the Kadampa Center, I don't remember, was it kadampacenter.org or something like that? I should know that. It's bookmarked. I don't remember the URL. But and go to the Meditation 101 page, you'll be able to get all the handouts that we've talked about. And I think there's 12 or 13 different handouts that are available, different meditations, talking about the 7-point sitting posture. So we'll do that. And then we'll do just a few minutes of silent meditation. And then I'm going to lead in kind of an analytical visualization meditation for a little bit. We'll play around with that, see how that works. And then we'll have our discussion. So, and again, if this is your first time, the objective is to, when we talk about just, there's different types of silent meditation. You can just watch your breathing. You can count your breaths. You can allow your mind to be very expansive, like the sky or like the ocean. There's a number of things you can do. The idea is that you build some level of concentration, and that's what we're kind of working on here at the beginning. And then when I start talking to you and doing the analytical meditation, then try to conjure up the images as much as you can as I kind of talk through it. The idea being, as we practice concentration and become our concentration becomes stronger, we're able to do the analytical meditations a lot more efficiently, or deeper, I suppose it is. So if you're on the floor on a cushion, you want to sit on the cushion with your hips kind of forward a little bit, allowing your knees to drop a little lower than your hips, and that kind of helps open up your spine. If you're on a chair, your feet should be flat on the floor. Try not to lean against the backrest of your chair, but try to sit up straight. Same on the floor, obviously. Think of your spine like a stack of coins, maybe, with a little bit of an S to it, but just kind of upright like that. The top of your head, if you can envision a string at the top of your head, at the crown of your head, and that kind of allows your chin to fall forward a little bit. Your hands should be either comfortably in your lap. There's a number of different ways you can put them. Traditional would be your right hand inside your left hand with your thumbs touching. But again, for our purpose, whatever is most comfortable is fine. Your eyes would be either closed or slightly open, and you'll learn to adjust that depending on whether you're getting a little sleepy or not. Or different meditations require you to suggest that you have your eyes open or closed. And then the tongue is resting at the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth. That's to allow your saliva and stuff to run back. So we'll take a few breaths in and out. We talked about 9-round breathing the last couple of weeks. If you want to do that, that's fine too. Just focus and allow your mind to kind of let go of anything. Let go of everything that's taken place up to this point in the day. Put your to-do list off to the side, mental to-do list. And once you get comfortable, just start doing your meditation, following your breath, counting your breath, or mind expansive. want you to take a moment and think about why you came tonight and set your motivation for why you're here, your intention. There are a lot of things you could have done this evening. Yet you made the choice to come here. So obviously you wanted to improve yourself. Maybe improve relationships, help other people through this practice. Whatever you think of that you want to add to that. So you want to be able to develop your mind to become wiser, maybe a kinder person, maybe be of benefit to people around you. I want you to visualize in the space above your head a ball of white light, pure, transparent, formless. Just a little smaller than your head. If it doesn't appear real sharply, don't worry about it. Just try to concentrate or feel it enough that it's there. And then think about that ball of light representing all universal goodness, love, compassion, wisdom, and the fulfillment of your highest potential. And then visualize that it decreases in size. As it gets smaller, it gets brighter, till it's about an inch in diameter. And it comes down and descends to the top of your head, to your heart center. From there it begins to expand. It slowly spreads and fills your body. As it does, all the solid parts of your body dissolve and become light. Your organs, bones, blood vessel, tissue, skin, all formless light. I want you to think that all problems, negativities, and hindrances have completely vanished. You feel serene and a sense of joy. Now imagine the light, the ball of light continues to grow and expands outside your body. Imagine as it grows, it begins to fill the room, enveloping people around you. Continues to grow to completely surround the building. Begins to grow and completely covers the neighborhood, expanding to the fairgrounds and the university. All area around. It keeps growing, covering the state, surrounding areas. The entire country. Allow it to grow and just completely cover the whole globe. Just try to hold on to that sensation as long as you can. I want you to dedicate that practice that we just did to the people that you thought about during your motivation, to the well-being and happiness of all those people. Okay, any comments or thoughts? Be able to keep that visualization alive? Stay awake? Anything?
I was experiencing tinnitus. You know that noise?
That the ringing sound.
Yeah, like the traffic going on in your head with rings going in. And then it just... I stayed with it, and I didn't notice it, but it went away.
Became part of your reality.
Yeah.
How's everybody? We don't have to just talk about that meditation. Anything else that's gone on in the last week or since we've started in the last 5 weeks? Yes, sir.
I think for me, in particular, I have a lot of difficulty with visualization meditation, but not so much with that one. For whatever reason, I think perhaps visualizing something that is a little less detailed in form, and also that I was expansive. So when I was thinking about the light, it wasn't constrained by any physical structures. Sort of not thinking about it too much, just letting it be. Whereas with other visualizations, having a real difficult time trying to focus clearly on whatever I'm visualizing.
Yeah.
So I think the light one was a lot easier for me to start with.
Good. Yeah, I have the same hard time with trying to visualize a deity or something like that and try to hold that image for your lifetime. But yeah, ball of light is just kind of there, right? So that works out. Good. Thank you. Anybody else have anything? How's the practice been going? People got things down now. We're up to about 90 minutes a day. issues. Tonight's kind of free form, so there's a lot of opportunity for discussion. Yeah. Good. Thank you. I can stay silent a long time.
I'm not up to 90 minutes.
No, I'm just kidding.
But, you know, I find that it is getting easier for me to just take a moment and take a time out and sit on my cushion. And like last night, you know, before I went to bed, I set my timer for 11 minutes.
Oh, good.
It was perfect time.
Yeah, 11 minutes is perfect.
Maybe I'll work my way up to like 22.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's definitely much easier than it was 5 weeks ago.
Oh, good.
So you must have been doing something right.
Well, you're doing something right. Yeah, no, not me. I'm just telling you what to do. But, you know, it's amazing how you begin to kind of expand that time. And, you know, some people for the first time, 2 and 3 minutes seem like a long time, you know, really long time. And then, you know, you gradually just kind of keep adding on time. And then at some point it's like, it's over, you know. I wish I had more time to sit here. So that just comes with doing it, like a lot of other things. You know, it's a habit of mind and practice. So.
Actually, as a side note, I had an appointment with one of my clients today, and we were talking about meditation.
Yeah.
And she sets her timer to go off at 2:30 every day, and she stops everything and she meditates.
Really?
Yeah.
She has a job that allows her to do that?
She has her own office.
So okay.
So she does close the door, but I was like, more power to you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because if you can just build the habit throughout the day, you know, maybe at some point then.
As long as she's not an air traffic controller. Or
yeah,
something,
that's right. Yeah. So, you know, in an ideal world, I would spend all my life sitting on a cushion, my time. That would be what I would want to do, and then everything else is what I do in between meditating. So when I start, you know, it's like I do all this stuff, and then I meditate at pieces. Ideally, you reverse that whole thing, so you're meditating, and then all the rest of this stuff that you do is just stuff that you do. You know, so I'm a long way. Yeah, it gets in your way of your meditation. But people that do long retreats, I mean, there's people that are out. There's a monk that we're kind of helping out a little bit up just north of Asheville. That he's in a 3-year retreat. There are people, I was talking to someone, a visiting teacher that was staying with us, and he knows people that are on lifelong retreats. And they have kids and grandkids. They come out twice a year. They go visit their family, and they go back to their cabin somewhere in Colorado, and they sit on their cushion all the time. Now, they've built a lifestyle that allows them to do that, but still, you know, that would be nice. For some people, that would be absolutely driving crazy. You know, 3 minutes will drive me crazy. But, you know, really, you gradually get to become looking forward to it, you know. Because it becomes your solitude. It becomes a place where you can actually mull over things in your mind. You can kind of eke out what was, you know, I think last week, right, we did the practice where you went back and looked at something that happened during the day or during the week and how you would have replayed that again. And you begin to find real value in just doing that a lot, you know. And you find all sorts of little things that you, wow, if I had a do-over for this, you know, and now I do, because I'm going to have that again, you know. You can play that again in your head, or I'll be confronted with that situation again, and I get to try to handle it differently. You know, what you get to explore in your mind, I mean, it's just vast. And most people on the planet haven't even considered that as something, right? They don't even think about the fact that they can sit down and explore their own thoughts and feelings and evaluate them and manipulate them and do things with them. They just make the assumption that all that stuff that comes up in my head is me, you know, and I have to deal with it. And some of it's good, some of it's bad, and I make the bad stories worse and I make the good stories better. And, you know, they don't even realize that all that stuff happens. All of the unconscious biases that we have, the things that crop up. Watch yourself. I do this. I watch myself in a grocery store. I get a kick out of, there's all sorts of little practices in the grocery store, waiting in the longest line, walking up and down the aisles. And as soon as I go around the corner, I see other people, it's amazing how quickly your mind lays some kind of judgment on that person, be it, you know, if it's male, female, big, little, tall, short, you know, skin color, whatever it is, something that just kind of a thought pops up in my head. And most people don't realize that they do that all the time. But we do that all the time, you know. And once you begin thinking, wow, where'd that thought come from? You know, there's a pretty good book, or the title of a book, right? Don't Believe Everything You Think. And we do. We tend to believe everything we think. And once you realize you have some control over that and you can readjust and break that cycle, it's really quite liberating, you know. You still got to do it. I mean, it's work, but at least it's you, most people don't realize that they have that control, the ability to do that. So, sorry, I kind of went off on a wherever. Anybody else have anything? Thoughts?
I was just going to say that for me, meditation got easier by learning the different types, so that it's not always the same thing.
Good.
And just being able to choose from one and have a different focus rather than just having clear my mind focus.
Yeah, good, good. And there are so many different types out there that you can do. When you start doing, if you get interested in Buddhism at all, in deeper, start looking at the Lam Rim and looking at some of the meditations that they have, you know, you can get into some pretty cool little nooks and crannies of your mind, and just kind of begin working in different areas. So I'm good. That's nice that you've got a repertoire you can pick from too. One thing I'll mention, and this is just from experience, is like there are some things that resonate with me that are easy, and there's other ones that aren't so easy. And when I started, I tended to want to do the ones that were easy, which is good. I mean, that's fine. But, you know, give yourself a little bit of stretch sometimes. The ones that don't work well for you, pick them up and try them every once in a while. And, you know, because, again, we're trying to create new neurological pathways in our brain. And when you kind of stretch into that new maze or work into that new pathway, the more you practice it, you begin to kind of open up. And you realize, that's what people are excited about, or that's something that is new that I could learn. So, sorry.
So it's the third time for me to attend your class. Thank you very much. I appreciate your teaching, and also thank Kadampa Center. For myself, yeah. When I do the meditation, for example, tonight, I feel the energy raise from the bottom, then go up. Initially, it's stuck here, then it go up again. then start here again, then go up again, then rest here.
The light?
The light? Yeah, well, just like something, maybe we can see it's like think, yeah, just go up, yeah, so. But after you rest here, the body will be comfortable and get relaxed and get a heat here and get a heat, yeah. So
you start from the bottom up,
yeah,
instead
yeah.
of the other way,
yeah,
okay.
So
that's a nice variation then, huh?
Yeah, so I think I recover something.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and there's lots of opportunities to kind of... yeah, there's so many different types of meditations out there.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for coming, all of you. I mean, I always learn something from these classes. It's always as beneficial for me, you know. I assume it's probably more beneficial for me. I've showed up every week. The numbers have kind of dropped or something. Thank you. Anybody else have any thoughts, problems, issues? Yeah, so it's something that we just want to kind of, you know, keep working at. Try to set up your practice in a way. I think I talked last week about, you know, having an area. I've mentioned that a few times. You know, you can begin to put a few things around that maybe make you feel good, and things that you want to kind of include into your little, you know, say an altar area, but it actually, that's what it ends up being, you know. Not as elaborate as this, but, you know, you could be. I've seen some in homes that are pretty elaborate, you know. But, you know, you don't have to have anything elaborate. Just something that you know, is your space. It's a place where you're going to sit and explore your mind a little bit. So, and again, it's used to transform. I had a note, I think it was from something, I don't know, I was actually sitting on my cushion and I thought about this. It kind of popped up. And I wanted to make sure that I mentioned something. I don't know if I implied... So, and this might have came up as one of the questions earlier, and I think that I might not have answered it quite right, but if something is harmful to you, the objective isn't to take, with meditation, take something that's harmful and transform it necessarily into something good, right? It's just to be able to try to change your mind, your attitude towards it. An example that I've heard used before, you know, if you're holding an infant, a baby, and it hits you, do you get mad at it? No. Why? It's a baby, and it doesn't know any better, right? So, what if it was like 2 years old? maybe. I don't know. Maybe not. So, you know, you can kind of keep going. At what point is a child supposed to know better, right?
25.
Okay, 25. So a 24-year-old causing harm to you, you can still use that same mentality. It doesn't mean that you have to tolerate the harm. Another, I don't know if I might have mentioned this other example about an animal caught in a trap. Did I say it? I'm sorry. So, you know, sometimes I'll picture an animal with its leg caught in a trap. And if you get near it, it's just going to bite and snarl at you, right? That doesn't mean that you don't have compassion for that creature. But it also doesn't mean that you go up and necessarily put yourself in harm's way either, right? So if there's people that are causing harm to you, if you kind of see it that way, you don't have to put yourself in harm's way, but you can slowly develop some compassion for the suffering that's going on in their head. Because you know it's worse on the inside of their head than it is on the outside, you know. We're just seeing what's coming on the outside. As you do these practices, slowly and slowly, those things that maybe before caused you harm and hurt you, you've learned to be able to kind of let go of. Doesn't mean that it couldn't still cause harm, but you decide that you're just not going to get pulled into all of that extra stuff that we add to it, right? It's that second arrow. It's all the stories that we make up after the harm's done that we continue with the pain and harm, right? So you begin to kind of let go of that stuff. Just like you watch it, you watch in your meditations these thoughts arise and you let them go. You see these emotions will come up like anger or frustration, and just watch it and say, you know, I don't have to get pulled along with that frustration. I don't have to allow that frustration to become anger and rage like I might have before. You can make the choice not to. That doesn't mean you stay, you know, you get bit by the animal or you allow yourself to be physically harmed or even put up with the verbal stuff. But you can choose that you're just not going to make a bigger story out of it than it is. And you begin to develop some compassion for the people that are actually causing the harm. Because it really is a lot of suffering for them. And that's where that harm comes from. That's where that anger on their side comes from. Watch it in yourself. I mean, when you get upset and strike out at somebody, it's because of something inside you that has caused some sort of suffering. You felt like you've been shorted or something, you didn't get what you want, whatever the case may be. And you can begin to kind of let go of those things. It's a gradual process, but that's when you start noticing your blood pressure coming down and all that other kind of physiological stuff that goes along with these practices, when you start to not allow all of that mental stuff to take place, right, and add to it. And we're not going to change their happiness necessarily. There's another saying in Buddhism they'll say a few times is, you know, we go through life trying to engineer the world to make it comfortable for us, make it happy for us. So he said it's easier rather than cover the world, the globe with leather, so we don't hurt our feet. It's easier to put the leather shoes, you know, put the leather on our own feet. So that's kind of where we're going with a lot of these practices too, is we're just trying to take care of our own mind and not try to change other people so much. That's kind of our constant battle. If only I could improve this person, my life would be a whole much better, right? It doesn't work that way. So any thoughts? Please. Michael needs to walk back and forth.
So in speaking about how we, you know, interpret the world, or how we, you know, maybe you're at the grocery store and you see that person down the aisle and you're like, oh, they're female and they look crabby and they, you know,
yeah.
And you're just making
the story
that you start making up. I don't know that I have as much issue, you know, or as many struggles with that, because I'm fairly even keeled. But when it comes to the closer, you know, like my children and my husband and those kinds of things,
right,
that's where I struggle a little bit more. So, like, if would that be like analytical meditation, where maybe, you know, I'm struggling with, you know, one of my teenagers' behavior and I'm taking it personally? And I'm trying to, like, meditate on how to look at it a different way, or how to not take it personally or something. Like, is that, like, what would you do? Would that be like an analytical meditation where you're kind of asking yourself a question? Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's different types of meditations, different types of analytical meditations, and they'll have, for specific problems, they'll give you anecdote type meditations, right? Antidote type meditation. So it might be meditations on compassion. There might be meditation. There's meditations on equanimity. We're going to do that here a little bit.
So, but like if you had something real specific that you were struggling with, like would you sit down and try to meditate on something broader like equanimity or compassion, or can you focus on something, a question that's a little bit more specific, and try to meditate on that?
You can do that. You can focus on something specific, but you have to be cautious that you don't meditate on making it worse. You know what I mean? Because that's what we do. We play the record over and over again, the negative stuff, and it grows because we just keep working that over in our head. We add new twists to the story. So you don't want to do that, you know. If you can deconstruct it in a way that ends up with compassion with all the players in it, then that would be ideal. But I guess I'd need to know like the specific kind of thing. And I may not know what that meditation would be that you would do. But you can do stuff like that too. You can break things down that way. And when the thing with the grocery store, this, it's not a story. It's not I don't find myself getting upset. I find that everybody does this, right? I can see somebody for the first time and I already know something about them when that's not true, right? Does that make sense? It's instantaneous almost. It's just almost instantaneous.
I think I tend to try to interpret people's emotions. You know, like they look happy, they look angry, they look frustrated, and that's where probably the stories now. I could look the same way and not think anything.
Right, right. No, and I was just using the physical descriptors as something. But there's all sorts of things that we make around. You know, why do they have that in their shopping cart? You know, your mind is just constantly coming up with these little stories. The other thing you can do in a grocery store, which is kind of fun, is especially good in like the produce section. It works out really well. And I'll tell you why. Like if you like, there's apples, right? This is the whole me mine versus everybody else. So, all right. Not that apple, not that apple. Now it's mine, right? As soon as it's in that buggy, it's labeled mine. Whereas just a little bit ago, it was not mine, you know? Take something out of somebody's buggy sometimes, see what happens. You know, they won't kill you, but it's like, what? Hey, that's mine. No, it's not yours. You haven't paid for it yet. You know, it's still in this store. You picked it out. But, you know, we have this stuff. We go through life that way, too, right? We shop for cars that way. We shop for shoes and clothing that way. All of our worldly possessions, we go through that process, you know? It's like, no, 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 mine. No, not that, mine. You know, we have this label of mine and not mine. And we collect stuff up that way. And it's never ours. You know, we did the meditation on impermanence. You know, when I'm dead and gone, my stuff's going to be gone. It's not mine. It never was mine. You know, I hung on to it for a while. But, you know, and then the whole thing about the story we make up when we have something new and how excited we are when it's new. Or when we know. See, I feel the excitement when I'm going to buy something new. Once I make the purchase, that little, I guess this dopamine rush is kind of gone. It's no longer there. And then, you know, you feel this kind of high for a little bit, and then something happens to it, and then all of a sudden the car's got a ding to it, or, you know, you get a stain on the clothing or something like that, and now it kind of drops off, right? And it loses its luster, and we begin looking for the next thing that we can buy that can give us that little rush again. And we go through our life just getting these little dopamine rushes on buying things. It's just an interesting process that we kind of go through. But I noticed that in a grocery store. It's kind of an observation. And you begin to see stuff like that and observe how your mind kind of does this stuff. And then you can begin to kind of, you know, play around with that. You know, I'm not going to get pulled into that marketing, you know, all of the stuff there at the cash register where I might normally buy one of these or one of those, you know. I'm going to resist that temptation and see what happens, you know. You can begin kind of playing around with things like that. And you realize you have a lot more control over your own mind rather than the folks out there having control over your mind, you know. So, anyway, grocery stores are a lot of fun for me. So. Yeah, so the whole point of the practice is to be able to kind of transform our mental processes and our thinking. To plan, do, check, act internally is the way I say it, right? We do that outside at work, but this is kind of an inside job. We can do the same kind of thing. So, any other thoughts? I've got a couple more meditations I'm going to do, and then we can talk about those. Oh, we got two more hands up. Good, thank you.
Thanks. When you talked about, you know, you can't encase the world in leather, you put the leather shoes on, I mean, that there's a lot of that that speaks to me. But one thing that I've struggled with thinking about that concept or concepts like that is this built-in complacency with an, you know, an unfair, in the face of an unfair world,
right,
or unfairness in the world. And I feel like, especially as like a white dude, that stuff doesn't a lot of that stuff doesn't necessarily impact me as much. But I think about like my niece and nephew or people of color growing up in that world, and I worry, like, is this a tool for me to just say, hey man, chill out, it's, you know, there's nothing you can do about it, you got to find your own path. I mean, I know it's not that simple. No. But I do struggle with this.
Yeah.
This kind of dealing with my own emotional response to that unfairness,
right,
in good ways without becoming complacent to that unfair. I mean, I don't know that everyone agrees with politics. I'm not trying to talk politics, but whatever whatever you're feeling that is unfair or unjust in society.
Sure.
I kind of worry about that struggle between those two.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. That's a good point. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that comes up quite a bit when people begin doing these practices. They're afraid that that they are going to be just kind of, you know, apathetic, right? And that's not the case at all. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, is an extremely passionate person. He's doing all sorts of stuff for Tibet, and he sees all the inequities that are taking place in Tibet and all the issues that are coming up. It doesn't mean that he gets angry about it. He's still a very passionate person and is very, like Gandhi, right? Gandhi had a lot of passion, but he was just not an angry person. So it doesn't strip that away. If nothing, it probably strengthens it, because you begin to develop a deeper sense of empathy, I think, and you begin to put yourself in other people's shoes more and more, which is a good thing, you know. So yeah, it doesn't strip that away. And we do some corporate work in this area too, and we do these things called 16 guidelines, and one of them is contentment. And it's like the water meditation that we did. It's kind of to help us understand, you know, what we have is maybe okay. Maybe we don't have to always keep chasing after more. And we have an awful lot. So there's a sense of gratitude that goes along with that. But, you know, if I talk about contentment in a corporation, there's a lot of waste that can time out. We don't want people to be content. They need to be. And see, we don't understand some of those terms in the West very well. So we're talking about the opposite of greedy when we talk about contentment. But in the West, the word contentment doesn't always settle well with people. Patience is the same way, right? Tolerance is a better term sometimes. So some of these emotions, there's often a positive emotion that goes along with what we're trying to get done. It's the negative emotion, the one that's causing problems for us that we want to kind of lose. So I don't know if that helped at all, but you won't get apathetic. I promise it. So don't let that be a fear. I mean, you could be if you wanted to, but you know, it's not. There's a lot of focus too on meditation, just as relaxation now too, right? There's a lot of people doing that, and it's really not about that. It's about changing your thoughts and feelings to being something more positive. That passion that you have, you can make that anger, but this is choosing to use it in a more positive way and still have that passion to change things. So, thanks. I don't know if that helped. Yeah, maybe. Or did that answer the question or not? Not. You're skeptical. Okay. And you had a question too, the gentleman behind.
Yeah, I was curious, you mentioned, creating a space like an altar at home, which I think, I've tried that and I think it works, but at the same time, like sometimes I'm just out and about. Like I'm riding the bus, and that's kind of a moment where I have time.
Right.
And I'll try to, meditate, for 10 minutes. And it's maybe a little challenging, but I don't know. I guess ideally maybe you should be able to meditate anywhere. And I guess I don't know is what are your thoughts on that? And do you think it's a good use of time, or is it better to just stick, just to this place where you have more solitude and quiet?
No, I think you're fine on the bus. Is perfect for meditation. If you've got the time to do it and that's what arises in your mind, go ahead and do it. The altar is just an opportunity to set up a more formal practice at home that you might have. But you should find as many opportunities off your cushion to do meditation or be mindful anyway, right? As much as you can. So I think that's perfect, Yeah, if you have a chance to do that, do it wherever you can. Be mindful. That's perfect.
I read a Dharma Daily quote this morning about a lot of people want to have a practice and they don't have the luxury of you can't have a room necessarily, but you can you can find a corner.
Yeah, that's
the way it was put.
Yeah, that's good. Sense. Yeah, you don't need much. I've seen people that make, little altars out of a little box, They take the lid off, they pull it off the shelf, they take the lid off. That's kind of where their mind, allows them to kind of focus on things, too. There was a question way in the back there, too. We have on our little altar at home, we have a little stupa, what's outside. And those are always good to circumambulate. And when I go out and do my walk in the morning, I always try to go clockwise around my neighborhood, thinking that, in the center is my little stupa. So it's not like I'm doing lots of them around. I'm doing one big loop around the stupa. So as long as I can think that, then that helps. So, yes, sir.
So something that I've been, maybe experimenting with my meditation and having to be kind of careful when I'm doing this, but with the realization that when I'm ruminating on something, I'm adding stories to it. But at the same time, that rumination is kind of like a concentration meditation. And so if I'm thinking about it, like if I'm ruminating on something that has been making me angry, I could have been, equivalently building the habits of a concentration meditation in that anger for years. Like, back in 1987 when this guy did it, it was on a Tuesday, and you keep thinking about that. But
we
now,
do that.
But now that I know to look for the story, I've started separating the story from the mechanism that motivates my concentration to stay on that. Hmm. And starting to take that motivation and inserting something that isn't negative. So, very obviously I have this habit of being motivated to think about these things very strongly. So I know the capacity is there. now I just have to change the subject.
Sure.
And I'm cautious about it because then I'm worried, like, oh, man, I'm going to start fixating on angry thoughts, thinking that I'm building a good meditation practice. But definitely, like, empowering myself to say, no, that's a story, but also seeing that there's some nuggets of habit in there that I can still tweeze out and learn from.
Right.
So I don't dismiss it as completely wholesale.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I think the bottom line is if the meditation makes you, if it makes you happy, if it makes you feel good, and I mean a kind of a deep, that eudaimonic happiness, you know, comes from it, that joy, not fantasy happiness, but, you know, kind of that deep joy, like from compassion and things like that, then you know, I would think that then having that story and turning it around to be something positive, you know, that makes you feel that way would be worthwhile. If you can change the motivation, I guess, is what you said, right? You kind of change that piece of it. Because we do. We meditate on negative stuff all the time. We've spent a lot of part of our life doing that. So, and those are just stories that we make up and play over and over and over again. So, all right. Tell you what, let's do a couple more meditations. These are both analytical ones. I'll do two more analytical ones. This one is a little bit long, but I think it's a worthwhile one. And this one's in your handout too. It's on equanimity. So the Buddhists think that we should see, you know, we have some people that we hold very dear to us, and other people that we don't. Some people that we dislike. When the idea is that we should treat everybody with equanimity, equal, right? We make up positive stories about the people that we like, and we make up negative stories about the people that we don't like. So this is a practice on equanimity. So I want you to, you know, get yourself in your correct position, on your seat, your feet flat on the floor, your back straight, your head up, chin down, hands comfortable, eyes closed, and your tongue at the roof of your mouth. And take a few big breaths in and out. Clear your mind. Now imagine the space in front of you. There are three people. Someone you like, someone you dislike, and someone you feel indifferent toward. We're going to keep these three images in our mind throughout the meditation, whoever those three people are. So I want you to first focus on your friend. Allow your feelings for that person to grow strong. Feel your conviction that this person is definitely and truly a friend. That is a person who is good to you, maybe fulfill some of your needs and wishes. Allow yourself to feel how you really want this person to be happy. And identify yourself with those good feelings. Now shift your attention to the person you call your enemy or the person you dislike. Maybe there's someone who's not kind to you. They don't help you. They annoy you, make you angry. Maybe they've hurt you in the past. think of this person carefully and look at the feelings you have about them. And then finally, shift your attention to the person that we call stranger or that we're indifferent towards. Maybe a person that you just barely know, you neither like nor dislike. And then look carefully at that person and note your feelings of indifference. Now I want you to consider and recognize the nature of your relationship with these three people and the labels that you've put on each of them based solely on what they do or don't do for you at this point in time. Think of the past of people who have been your friend but then became your enemy. And vice versa. Or strangers who then become either friends or enemies. Each of these labels is temporary and impermanent. It's just based on the current situation at the time. Now move your attention back to your friend and imagine a situation that would cause that friendship to end. Imagine your friend turning against you. Experience the resentment and anger and hurt that you'd feel in that situation. Do you still have that sense of warm, friendly feeling toward that person? Do you still wish them well? Want that person to be happy? Where is your friend now? Remember, this person was not your friend before you were acquainted. And recognize how easily the person could cease to be your friend now, just like you've imagined. Think to yourself that there's no real sound reason for feeling kind and loving towards only a friend at this moment. Relationships have changed in the past and they'll continue to change. Now move your attention to the present, the person that you've labeled enemy. Imagine a situation in which you could be drawn close to that person. Maybe common interest, a word of praise or kindness. Look at that person and your feelings toward them very carefully. Do your feelings begin to soften, become warmer? You can learn to feel warmly toward your enemies. It's happened before and it'll happen again. So why do we hold so strongly to the concept that this person is definitely an enemy? Finally, move your attention to the stranger. Imagine how one act of kindness or anger from this person could immediately turn him or her into a friend or an enemy, respectively. There's no inherent, definite, permanent stranger there. There's no sound reason for feelings of indifference that we hold on to. Remember, your present friend and your present enemy were both strangers to you beforehand. Maintain your awareness of these three people in front of you and think about how fragile and impermanent these relationships are. It's only your misconceived belief in the concreteness of these labels, friend, enemy, and stranger, that holds your mind back from possibility of change and fluidity. All of these people, your friend, enemy, and stranger, all want happiness just as much as you do. And in that respect, you're all equal. And everyone is equal in having the potential to develop their minds to the fullest extent and to achieve clarity and compassion. The differences that we see in people are superficial, based only on our mistaken and narrow self-centered view. In fact, everyone is equal in deserving our care and compassion. That said, none of this means we should not discriminate at all. On a practical level, our ability to distinguish between actions and individuals is necessary. Naturally, we feel closer to some people, and it's wise for us to keep distance from others. That's not in any way contradictory to this meditation. The point of the meditation is to develop equal concern, equal regard for everyone, for their well-being, whether they help or harm us at this point in time. And to see that the labels we put on others are often arbitrary, mistaken, and very changeable. Any thoughts on that meditation? Were you all able to kind of go through? Yes, ma'am. Microphone's coming at you.
I honestly couldn't think of an enemy.
Yeah.
Which is kind of good.
Yeah, it is.
So I kind of made up one, but it was not really
doesn't
an
work,
enemy.
Does it?
No, and then I ended up, I don't know if I should share this with people, but then for a moment I thought, well, my husband is all three of those at some point.
Yeah.
And but not really an enemy.
Right.
But that was like the closest I could get to.
That's good.
Visualizing or putting this in context of an enemy, but it changes.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good practice.
But I kept thinking back, and I really cannot think of any individual who I held on to as an enemy.
And I've had people say that before in class, and I struggle with the same thing. There's people that I don't particularly want to be near. I don't want to spend a lot of time with, but I couldn't necessarily say that they were an enemy. But you know, I think that's a good point, though. You see with the people that we're closest to, our spouses or whatever, we see, well, they kind of weave in and out, right? We go through periods where we're angry at somebody, and then we're very loving towards somebody, and we might have periods of indifference. And so we just, you know, their spouse, right? So it's for a long time. So we kind of, it's a little different in that regard, but it gives us, it allows us to see that fluidity, I think. I think that's good. Thank you for sharing that one.
Great.
Anybody else have any?
So I started to realize that I had a lot of people who have kind of fallen in all three, and in various orders. And I found it helpful in feeling like why should I not have compassion towards somebody? Because at any moment they could move in and out of these things. And no matter what order they changed, at some point I did care about them. So I thought that was really interesting because I did select three very specific people and then started realizing that they could start swapping places at any moment.
Yeah, yeah. And people do. You know, I can think back of, and I can see it easier in other people's relationships. I can see, you know, other people that at one time were very close, and then all of a sudden something happened, and they don't speak to each other. And, you know, I've seen some family issues come up sometimes that, you know, last for forever. Hatfield and McCoy kind of thing, you know. And no one even knows what it was that started the separation, you know. It was always the other person, of course. So, yeah, the more time you can kind of spend through this equanimity, this is a good practice to develop, a good one to put in your repertoire, right? Is to kind of spend time looking at that, because we've all seen those kind of relationships go, kind of change around. Yes, ma'am.
So, I would say that. You know, similarly, I don't know that there's anybody that I would call an enemy per se. Or I think to hate someone is a waste of your personal energy and
right.
things like that. But, you know, unfortunately, I had three specific people that, out of a very, very extreme circumstance, that came to mind. And probably too much information, but my best friend was murdered by her husband.
Ooh.
And unlike, who's the sweet gentleman who always
said Andre. Yeah.
Unlike Andre, I struggle more with finding forgiveness for that person. But all in that same time frame, I had two other friends that were very, very close friends, like, you know, very close, like best friends, like people you talk to every day, that made very questionable decisions.
Yeah.
That turned them into not friends.
Okay.
And one of which, you know, I kind of came to terms with that I cared enough about her to make her a friend again. And the other who, because we have common interests, such as our children, who are friends, I have to like find a better like sense of peace of mind
right.
about them.
Tolerate.
And tolerance. and equanimity.
Yeah.
And so I've been working at my equanimity for this particular gal. Because again, you know, everybody, you know, you never know everybody's side of the story and
right,
all those
right.
things. But in my most extreme case, I struggle to find forgiveness, even though that person I don't have to see every day.
You right,
know, they're not,
right.
They're not physically in my life. But, you know, that's why, you know, Andre's story is touching to me.
Yeah.
Because that's such a hard, hard choice and direction to go in to find equanimity for somebody that truly hurt
right.
you or hurt
yeah.
your family or your friends or those kinds of things. So,
but. Yeah, that's the, you know, it's like a lot of the other practices. You start out with something easy, and you keep allowing it to grow and grow and grow, and you never know what you're going to be confronted with. That's going to try those opportunities. And, you know, you might surprise yourself at how well you realize, wow, my practice has come a long way, because 5 years ago or a year ago or 3 months ago, I would have reacted entirely different to this mm-hmm. situation,
yeah.
you know? So it's just a constant process of working through it. So thank you.
You're welcome.
It is 8:20 and I've got one more meditation I want to do. So, and then we'll wrap things up. If that's okay, if y'all are willing to sit for another 5 minutes or whatever. So, this is like before. I want you to calm, you know, sit yourself down. You know the pose. We won't go through that again. Take a few breaths in and out. Allow your mind to kind of relax and let go. Another visualization or an analytical meditation. Now imagine you're sitting here in this room and the door opens up and a young person walks in and it's you 10 years younger. Or 15 years younger. And that person comes over and sits down in front of you. And you begin having a conversation with that person. What advice might you give them? And what advice might they give you? Would you like that person, and would they like you? Now the door opens again, and imagine somebody 10 years or 15 years in the future, older than you, comes in, and it's you 10 or 15 years from now, and they sit down across from you and you have a conversation. How would that conversation go? What might they tell you, and what might you tell them? Would you like each other? Now the door opens once more, and there's an elderly, frail person there. And they slowly walk over with their cane and sit down next to you. And it's you at 95. What kind of advice might they give you? And what might you tell them? Would you like them? And would they like you? It was a little rushed, but sometimes I'll put a third person in there. Were you able to visualize those? How'd that one go? That conjure up some stuff? It's kind of a hard one to leave things on sometimes. Sorry about that. Any thoughts? Yes, sir.
Back to the future.
I find it interesting because one of the issues that I've had that I've been working on meditation is finding compassion for myself. And having the distinct feeling that not only did the older versions, but also the younger versions of myself had more compassion for me than I did for myself.
Huh.
That was a really bizarre feeling. But also hopeful in that it's somewhere in there.
Yeah. So. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other thoughts? Yes, sir.
Thanks, sir. So when you get in a meditation for the first two versions, I just saw them, then they talk with me, but not very impressed you. But the last one, the older one, the 95 one, is very clear. It's shortened to me. And use a
cane stick, or something.
And but in the face is white and has it right a little bit also right.
Yeah.
So seems very heavy, and he talked with me and just keep going.
So oh, good.
What I'm doing right now, So, it's pretty impressive.
Good. Yeah, so you picture yourself at 95, and then you can just be what would that person have been like at my current age? Yeah, that's always a fun one to kind of do too. See yourself as someone old and very wise and compassionate, and then bring it back in time to whatever age you are now. What would that person be doing? What would that life be like? You know. What would I have to do to reach that point? Yes, sir.
I think to me it brought a lot of perspective. Especially recently, I've been dealing with a lot of like health problems and like finding out like I have a heart condition. So having like to visualize me at 95 was like something I don't think about.
Yeah.
I don't ever think about like longevity, so like forcing myself to kind of have that conversation was a lot.
Oh, good. Well, maybe do something that, you know, is easier initially, you know. 60, I don't know. You know, that might sometimes.
64 is a lot of fun, I know.
Yeah, that's right. I stopped doing the 61 too. Yeah, I stopped doing that too, so. Well, I'm sorry, you had... Yeah.
So, when I was talking to myself, kind of like what you were saying in the back, I have always been very, very hard on myself, and I hope to God that by the time I'm 95, I can find forgiveness in myself and be less critical and all those things. But in regards to what you were saying, you know, I think that in trying to meditate and be the better me and things like that, I also think about health and you know, impermanence, you know, because, you know, my mom had just passed, but at the same time, my husband has a heart condition and is only, I don't know what he is, 46, something like that, and has tried to die on me twice. He thinks he's a cat or something. But I think that, you know, sometimes when I'm meditating, I just meditate on like the strength and purity of like my body and, you know, whether it's like, you know, I'm a girl, so, you know, I'm like, oh, I got to lose weight or I got to whatever, but, you know, but to think about, you know, that just having a strong body and a strong mind. And I think that would be good for you, a good meditation for you, because I think a lot of our health and wellness and things like that, from all the reading that I do, because I'm kind of quirky like that, there's so much to be said about that positive thinking and that, you know, having that kind of energy flow. So that's what I'd say to you.
Yep. It all starts with a thought, you know. All starts with a thought. So we have, it is 8:30. This is the first time we've run over. I'm always usually 8:29. We've covered a lot in 5 weeks. It may feel like that. Maybe it doesn't. There are lots of other things you can take here. There's a lot deeper that you can take this practice, this meditation. We've just kind of barely scraped the surface. You know, I would encourage you to keep working on your practice as much as time, your meditation as much as you can. It's easy to allow this to kind of, it just kind of slips out of the picture. And then something comes up in your life, maybe something traumatic or something concerning, and then you try to do the meditation again. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you do the practice regularly, you find you're much more resilient when those things do come up. And they will, right? All of that stuff does come up. So, any final thoughts? I thank you all. Thank you all for coming for 5 weeks. And it's been a joy for me, and I've enjoyed it. You all take care. Be careful going home. Maybe we'll see you back around here sometime. Thank you. Dedicate on the way out for all, all of your practice, for all of the people, all sentient beings.